This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Spent a couple of days last week up in Aspen, Colorado, a Fortune magazine conference there. And as one does when traveling for business or, in my case, waiting around for an interview, wound up spending a lot of time checking my Slack, which was apropos.
I'm Kai. Good to see you. How are you?
Because the guy I was waiting for...
I was literally just checking my Slack from work, even though I'm taking the day off.
Yeah, get away.
Runs the company. Stuart Butterfield is the co-founder and CEO of Slack. It's a messaging app started back in 2013, since popularized in workplaces around the country and around the world. Slack's got 10 million users and went public in a direct listing on the New York Stock Exchange about a month ago. But that doesn't mean that everybody totally gets what this company does.
There will be people who listen to this interview who don't know what Slack is.
What?
I know.
Seems impossible.
Well, look, me 2 years ago would have been the same thing.
Yep.
Right? And many others. So what's the, you know, for those who don't know?
If I want to put it in really simple terms, I would say it's a messaging app for teams. I don't think that really gives you the whole picture.
That tells me nothing.
Yeah, so let me, I'll elaborate a little bit. So I guess the big thing is in Slack, messages go into what we call channels.
Mm-hmm.
So people are really used to using email to mediate their communication inside of big organizations, small organizations, any of them. And in every case, each person has their own view. So everyone's inbox is unique. Everyone's inbox is locked away from everyone else. And everyone's inbox is kind of partial and fragmented. So when you put messages into channels instead of inboxes, it's kind of a team-first or an organization-first approach to communication in contrast to an individual-first approach.
So let me ask you this, though. As the guy running the company, you're probably in a 1,000 channels at Slack HQ.
Literally,
right?
Thousands.
Yes. So, which gets to my point. Mm-hmm. Isn't Slack sometimes a little bit overloading? And don't you have to sort of decide what you're not going to participate in and mute and all this? I mean, how do you use it on a daily basis?
You do. And I think it takes some getting used to. I mean, people have to adjust patterns of communication. Because if you look at it this way, imagine a 10,000 person organization. And the person who gets the most email inside of that organization might get 0.01% of all the email that's going through the whole company. In Slack, what's typical for organizations of 10,000 is 10 to 15% of the messages will be in what we call public channels. So they're not public to the whole world. They're public inside of the organization.
Right.
So that's 1,000 times more access to information than you would otherwise have. So you want it, but the trick is you want it like, I want everything that's on the internet via Google. I just want to be able to search for it. I don't want it all coming at me all the time. So I think tuning notifications and channel membership and getting things set up just right, and also, you know, to be honest, some like a cultural shift are necessary to really get the most out of it.
Do you leave desktop warnings on? Do you let it play a sound when you get a new Slack? I mean,
no, I don't. I have all sounds and all notifications off on all of my devices. So
smart man, smart man. Part of your vibe, though, actually, just to the whole notifications off thing, is you have to be able to detach. Right? Mm-hmm. You and this company try to take a really holistic view of life, not just work life, but life.
Yeah.
How do you disconnect when your boss, or well, my boss, not your boss, can Slack you at 9 o'clock at night and say, hey, where's this story?
Well, I'm glad your boss isn't slacking me at 9 o'clock at night.
She's actually not on Slack, but that's a whole different thing.
So I think people have to shift their behaviors a little bit. And this is not a new problem. I remember, you know, Walt Mossberg, longtime columnist for the Wall Street Journal. He switched to Slack in 2016 or 2017.
It's kind of late.
Yeah. Well, when Vox bought.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
He wanted to do an interview, and he's, Walt's a famously cranky guy.
was complaining. We're going to leave that in, by the way.
Okay, so that's good. I'm sure he'll appreciate it. But he was saying, it's too many notifications. It's too busy. There's too much going on. And I reminded him, I don't remember he wrote this, but in the journal in 2001, there's this article about BlackBerries are ruining our lives.
Man.
There's no such thing as a vacation anymore. There's no work-life balance. So it is, once you get a technology, there's a period of adjusting to it to get the most out of it while kind of minimizing the downside.
Do you want to replace email? Is that the deal?
Want to replace email for internal communication, so inside of companies.
Right.
There are hundreds of millions of people whose working lives are mediated by email who should be using Slack or something like it. So maybe we don't end up with 100% market share, but the market is orders of magnitude bigger than where we're at today.
Are you still then a small, scrappy startup?
I don't think so anymore. We're a gangly adolescent, maybe, something like that.
Going up against Microsoft, I mean, that's got to be intimidating.
Well, I don't know if you've ever seen that picture of the Microsoft team when they're still in Albuquerque in 1977.
Oh, of course, yeah. Sure. With Bill Gates and Paul Allen. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, if listeners can Google that, it's...
Are you guys are that picture? Is that the comparison you're making?
No, but if you look at that picture...
Because that's a gutsy move, man.
I can't remember if it's 77 or 79, but by 1982, the tides had turned, and IBM, which was the biggest and most powerful, most valuable company in the entire world, just got bested by Microsoft. So the point I'm trying to make here is sometimes the small startup with real traction with customers has an advantage versus the large incumbent with multiple lines of business and a lot of stuff to protect.
So I'm going to pull up the Marketplace's Slack app here, and let's see, our channels, there's Hot on Social, there's a thing for a podcast I do, there's newsletter recommendations, there's Party People, there may well be one that's like Dogs of Marketplace that I'm not on, you know? Mm-hmm. So there is a certain amount of... less serious communication than happens on Slack, right?
There is.
You're good with that.
I'm really good with that. So you think about, there's some frivolous ones for sure. There's a channel inside of our Slack instance for fans of Rick and Morty and another one for fans of Game of Thrones. But there's also one called Parentland, which is a private channel and people use it to give each other help and advice and support for people who have young kids. There's a phenomenon whereby trust and the amount of communication required to get a job done are inversely correlated. So in a high trust environment, you don't really need to communicate very much. In a low trust environment, every point is kind of lawyered and you go back and forth and people are questioning each other constantly. That makes a huge difference to how easy it is to get work done.
Stuart Butterfield, thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me.